Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Friday, March 11th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, City sets new record for gas price average. 60-cent jump puts Midland in same situation as most Texas metro areas, by Stuart Doreen. The average price of gasoline in Midland jumped almost 60 cents in a week and set a new record, according to AAA Texas. In Midland, the average was $4.07, which broke the previous record average of $4.04 set in July 2008, according to AAA Texas. The organization reported it was a turbulent week for prices across the state, as the statewide average increased 62 cents over the last week and now stands at $4. But eight of the larger 27 metropolitan areas in Texas set new records, according to AAA Texas. El Paso again held the top spot for the week. The average there is $4.19. Dallas and Fort Worth Arlington were tied with Midland at $4.07. Odessa was fifth at $4.06. Here are more highlights from AAA Texas's weekly report. 15 of the 27 cities showed averages of $4 or more. Last week, no city in Texas showed an average of $3.60. San Angelo showed the largest weekly increase among the cities across Texas, 72 cents. The average there was $4.05. Amarillo again posted the lowest average, $3.74. The increase this week was 50 cents, the lowest across the state. No other metropolitan area is showing an average lower than $3.90. In Abilene, the increase was 52 cents, the second lowest in the state, but the average there still rose over $4, $4.01. Midland's average is $1.24 over the same time last year. The statewide average has jumped $1.45 during the same period. This article is entitled, Residents' Road Trips Declined in Pandemic. Website's analysis shows 19.9% drop in span of 3 years, by Stuart Doreen. Few smaller cities reported a greater decline in road trips during the COVID pandemic than Midland. Midland ranked 184th of 206 smaller cities across the nation for the decline in road trips since COVID, according to the website outdoorsy.com. An analysis from the Recreational Vehicle Marketplace website showed a 19.9% decline in long-distance road trips from those living in the Midland metropolitan area from 2019 to 2021. A summary of the data from the Midland metropolitan area showed change in long-distance road trips 2019 to 2021, 19.9%. Total long-distance road trips, 2021, 4,654,890. Total long-distance road trips, 2019, 5,812,006. The study also shows that in 2019, the number of long-distance road trips averaged around 60 million per week across the nation, according to the U.S. Bureau of Transportation Statistics. During the last 2 years, however, that figure exceeded 72 million per week on average. And road trips in 2021 showed less of the seasonal swings of previous years, hovering around 75 million trips per week for most of the year. To determine the locations with the most people taking road trips compared to pre-pandemic levels, researchers at Outdoorsy calculated the change in 100 to 500-mile trips from 2019 to 2021. to improve relevance, only metropolitan areas with at least 100,000 residents were included. For reference, here are the statistics for the entire United States. Change in long-distance road trips 2019 to 2021, plus 20.9%. Total long-distance road trips 2021, 3,810,300,104. Total long-distance road trips 2019, 3,152,338,169. This article is entitled, Study Says City Has Low Percentage of Families with Military Members. Online report also indicates less than 0.5% nationwide serve in active duty. By Stuart Doreen. Midland has the 10th smallest percentage of households with at least one household member currently serving in the military, reserves, or National Guard, according to FilterBy.com. The AirFilter website said that an analysis shows that 1.6% of the Midland population lives in military households. Other statistics about the Midland metropolitan area show percentage of population who are active duty, 0.1%. Percentage of population who are veterans, 4.6%. Percentage of population who are reserve / National Guard, 0.4%. Military branch with largest active presence, Army. The study also showed, citing data from the U.S. Census Bureau, that 3.2% of the U.S. population lives in a military household, with at least one active duty military, reserves, or National Guard member. Other notables from the study included that during the height of the Vietnam War in 1968, there were nearly 3.7 million active duty military members, comprising 1.8% of the total U.S. population. But the share of active duty military members has declined since then. In 2020, 1.5 million Americans, or less than 0.5% of the population, served as active duty. Also, the report states a much larger share of women serve. Female enlistees account for 16% of enlisted forces, up from 2% in 1973, while the share of female officers has increased from 8% in 1973 to 19%. At the same time, the armed forces have become more racially and ethnically diverse, and the share of military members with children has fluctuated over time. In 2010 and 2011, 44% of active-duty military personnel were parents. As of 2020, this figure had dropped to less than 36%. To determine the U.S. metropolitan areas with the most military families, researchers at FilterBy analyzed the latest data from the U.S. Census Bureau. The researchers ranked metros according to the percentage of the population in a military household, defined as one in which at least one household member currently serves in the military, reserves, or National Guard. Researchers also calculated the percentage of the population who are active duty military personnel, the percentage of the population who are veterans, the percentage of the population who are in the reserves or National Guard, and the military branch with the largest active presence. The statistics for the entire United States are as follows. Percentage of population in a military household, 3.2%. Percentage of population who are active duty, 0.4%. Percentage of population who are veterans, 5.3%. Percentage of population who are reserve / National Guard, 1.0%. Military branch with the largest active presence, Army. This is the Community State page. This article is entitled, A&M to Sever Research Ties with Russian Entities, by Kate McGee, the Texas Tribune. Texas A&M University Chancellor John Sharp on Wednesday moved to sever all ties with Russia, making it the first Texas university to take such action following the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The action was disclosed in a memo Sharp sent out to school officials. He also asked agencies to review non-contractual engagements with Russian entities. Quote, please note that this action is in no way an indictment of our faculty members of Russian descent, nor a criticism of faculty working to improve conditions in Russia, especially for oppressed groups in that country, unquote, Sharp wrote. Quote, I believe most, if not all, of our faculty oppose the aggression of Russian President Vladimir Putin and his cronies and will support this action, unquote. According to the memo, agreements between the school and Russia could include student and faculty exchange programs and study abroad programs. But also included are any research-related agreements that involve clinical trials, testing, data use agreements, and licensing agreements. System leaders said there are fewer than 10 research agreements across the system, and they do not believe the move will have a significant impact on its 11 individual universities, 8 state agencies, and RELUS, A&M's research campus in Bryan. The system did not immediately respond to a request for those individual agreements. While some universities across the country have announced they are cutting financial ties, few have announced a severing of research partnerships. In late February, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology announced it was ending its research partnership with the Skolkovo Institute of Science and Technology in Moscow, which receives funding from the Russian government. Across the country, higher education has had a mixed reaction to the invasion of Ukraine. Earlier this week, the Arizona Board of Regents voted to sell off millions in Russian assets across its 3 university systems. The University of Colorado also announced it would liquidate its financial investments in Russia. The University of Texas system and the Texas State University system did not immediately respond to questions as to whether they planned similar actions. This article is entitled, Roy Gohmert, Among Those Who Voted Against Ban on Russian Oil, by Todd J. Gilman, The Dallas Morning News. Washington. The House voted overwhelmingly late Wednesday to ban oil imports from Russia, with 2 Texas Republicans among the very few dissenters. Representatives Louis Gohmert of Tyler and Chip Roy of Austin offered similar explanations for bucking the bipartisan consensus on closing the U.S. market over the invasion of Ukraine. What good does it do to ban Russian oil if you're going to go buy it from Venezuela or Iran? Roy argued on the House floor before the 414-47 vote last Wednesday. But the United States currently imports no oil from Venezuela, according to federal data, and only 1,000 barrels from Iran last year. Representative Lloyd Doggett, Democrat Austin, introduced the bill to ban Russian oil imports and led the floor debate before its passage. Gohmert, now a lame duck after giving up his safe seat for failed bid for Texas Attorney General this month, also invoked Iran and Venezuela. And he accused President Joe Biden of undermining U.S. energy security and independence through a decision on his first day to make America and Europe dependent on Russia, Iran, and Venezuela for oil while he chases a green new nightmare. That, Gohmert said, has made the world dangerous for democracy while funding those who will end our freedom. It's unclear what that's based on. Imports account for 20% of the U.S. supply of oil, according to U.S. Energy Information Administration data. Prior to the embargo, Russian oil accounted for 8% of U.S. imports, that is, about 1.6% of the entire U.S. supply. The U.S. imported nearly twice as much from Russia in December 2019 under President Donald Trump as it did last December under Biden. There is no way I could vote to exchange getting oil from Putin for getting oil from some other tyrant or country that wants to destroy America, Gohmert said in a statement, calling the embargo on Russian oil a cynical political ploy, albeit one that nearly all fellow Republicans in House fell for, too. This article is entitled Democratic Runoff Slated for Texas Attorney General Race, from the Associated Press. Houston. Dallas civil rights attorney Lee Merritt suspended his campaign for Texas Attorney General Thursday, setting up a May runoff between the top Democratic primary vote-getter Rochelle Garza and former Galveston Mayor Joe Jaworski. During a news conference in Houston, Merritt acknowledged that as a ballot recount continued from last week's primary, he came to realize he was unlikely to beat Jaworski for second place and a place in the runoff. He said he was stepping aside to endorse Garza as the best candidate to challenge the Republicans to be Texas's top lawyer. She has demonstrated that she can run a campaign that energizes our base, that reflects the diversity of our party, Merritt said of the South Texas civil rights lawyer. The Democratic nominee will, in November, face the winner of a Republican runoff between Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and Texas Land Commissioner George P. Bush. Paxton drew a high-profile series of primary challengers and failed to secure a majority of primary votes in his bid for a third term after his former deputies reported him to the FBI, accusing him of corruption. The federal probe is ongoing, and Paxton is also awaiting trial on state securities fraud charges brought in 2015. This is the Community Nation from the front page. This article is entitled, White House Extends Mask Mandates for Transit Airlines Through April 18th, by Jessica Werman, CQ Roll Call, TNS. The White House on Thursday announced it would extend the current federal mask mandate for passengers on airplanes and public transit for another month, the third extension of the mandate since it was imposed in January 2021. The requirement, which had been set to expire March 18th, will now extend through April 18th, according to a Biden administration official, with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention spending the next month examining how best to proceed. During that time, CDC will work with government agencies to help inform a revised policy framework for when and under what circumstances masks should be required in the public transportation corridor, an administration official said. This revised framework will be based on the COVID-19 community levels, risk of new variants, national data, and the latest science. The extension comes as a handful of states, many with Democratic governors, and the CDC itself have altered requirements or recommendations that Americans wear masks in public places. The transportation requirement applies to passengers on airplanes, trains, and buses, and those in airports. In late February, the CDC released guidelines suggesting that roughly 70% of Americans could stop wearing masks depending on the prevalence of the virus in their communities. The guidance included a variety of factors, included COVID-19-related hospital admissions over the previous week and new coronavirus cases per 100,000 people. That shift spurred both travel groups and some Republican lawmakers to urge the CDC and Transportation Security Administration to lift the requirement. The two agencies collaborate on both the recommendation and enforcement of that recommendation. An airline industry group, Airlines for America, said in a statement its members would continue to comply with and enforce the federal mask mandate, while also urging the administration to identify a path forward from COVID-era policies, including eliminating pre-departure testing requirements when they are no longer supported by recent circumstances.
Hello, this is Cindy, reading from the Odessa American for Friday, March 11th. Perriman. Basin can ride out volatile oil market. The Russian invasion of Ukraine has put supply and demand out of whack, but Odessa economist Ray Perriman sees a natural maximum for oil prices. With prices of any good or service in a functioning market, There is a natural maximum at which point enough buyers leave the market to bring supply and demand into balance. Some amount of oil and gas consumption is essential to meeting human needs for power generation, necessary transportation, and the production process. However, there is a significant portion that could be curtailed if prices continue to rise, such as leisure travel. We have seen this pattern in the past, the president and CEO of the Perriman Group said in an email. The Gas Buddy website, the best price for gas in Odessa was $3.39, but most spots were at $3.99 or more early Thursday afternoon. The invasion has certainly pushed up prices, which were already rising due to supply and demand imbalances, Perriman said. When the third largest producer of oil is facing potential disruptions and countries are refusing to purchase Russian oil, uncertainty and supply constraints lead to price increases. Imports of Russian oil account for a small percentage of U.S. oil consumption, but for certain areas not well supplied with pipelines or refineries, typically purchasing Russian oil, there will be challenges. He added that because the Permian Basin and Russian economies center on oil and gas, there is some level of cross-investing and business going on. However, I don't see it as a major drag on the basin economy if those linkages are stalled or ended. On balance, they should be more than offset by increased local activity, Perriman wrote. He added that it is difficult to project how high oil prices could go with the influence of so many variables. I don't think it's unreasonable to think it could spike significantly higher, though I doubt that extreme price levels will persist. The situation in the Ukraine is very fluid, and markets will try to evaluate events and set prices as they unfold and often overreact initially. Going forward, however, I do not expect a major crash in prices, but a return to more manageable levels, Perriman wrote. In 2021, net imports of oil from Russia averaged 672,000 barrels per day, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, Perriman said. Although there is some capacity to quickly increase production, I think we're already seeing the bulk of those easy responses. The key to increasing domestic supplies in a meaningful way is for the policymakers to stop stifling responsible development in the industry. There is no doubt that meeting climate goals means investing in renewable energy, but it also means burning conventional fuels cleaner. Policies that curtail the ability of the U.S. oil and gas industry to expand or ignoring the incontrovertible fact that renewables simply cannot expand fast enough or with enough consistency and reliability to meet global needs, Perriman said. The Permian Basin has the resources and know-how to increase production under the right conditions, but the policy environment is impacting the ability to raise capital and simply not letting that happen as it should, he added. Permian Grad talks about his time in Ukraine by Michael Bauer. For many, seeing Russia's invasion of Ukraine has been disheartening. For others, including Permian graduate Andy Fausch, the tragedy unfolding in Ukraine has been felt on a personal level. Fausch, who graduated from Permian in 1993, spent a year living in Lviv, Ukraine, as a foreign exchange student after he finished high school. Andy, who is the son of Odessa businessman Phil Fausch, now lives in New York City as a marketing executive for a startup tech company called Osum. But the former Odessan has been to Ukraine a couple of times in his life and has been horrified by what is happening in the Eastern European country. It's unbelievably difficult to watch, Andy Fausch said. Ukrainians are such a proud, nationalistic, humble people. I'm not at all surprised by the amount of resistance that they're putting up. I'm surprised that Russian President Vladimir Putin didn't think this would happen by sending in troops, that thinking Ukrainians wouldn't stand up for their lands and their homes and for their families and communities. On February 24th, people in the U.S. woke up to the news that Russia had invaded its neighboring country. The conflict is now entering its third week as Russian troops advance towards the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv. Russian forces have shelled civilian areas and cut off electricity, food, and water supplies, forcing many to evacuate the country. Ukraine was once a part of the Soviet Union before declaring its independence in 1991 during the collapse of the USSR. Ukraine's rough history also saw the country fall under Nazi Germany occupation during the Second World War before the Soviets reclaimed it. It was 2 years after Ukraine's independence when Andy Fauch, along with 9 other Americans, went to Lviv, a city located in western Ukraine that has a population of around 721,301 people near the Poland border. I lived with a host family that had sent their granddaughter to the U.S. the same year that I was living with them in Ukraine, he said. It was just fascinating. Ukraine in 1993 was vastly different than it is today, at least before the Russian invasion. The country had just broken off from the Soviet Union and was still in the transition period from communism to a democratic country. It wasn't an easy transition, Andy Fauch said, as many things in Ukraine were being rationed, such as electricity and food. It was the end of the Cold War, he added. Coming from the United States with no perspective of what it was like behind the Iron Curtain, it was very unique in a lot of different ways. There were things like water and electricity that were rationed on a daily basis. Electricity and water was on for 6 to 8 hours a day. I lived in an old Soviet bloc apartment complex on the outskirts of the city. Because of the switch to capitalism, there was a confusion in Ukraine surrounding currency and inflation. Phil Fauch visited his son in Ukraine in the spring of 1994 for about 2 weeks, and both visited Russia. The elder Fauch talked about his experience during that trip, where they both noticed that Russia was also going through an economic depression at the time, just like Ukraine was. I can remember going into Russia and staying in a hotel, and they were using torn-up newspapers for toilet paper, Phil Fauch said. They were in a huge depression. It was horrible. During that visit, he remembers also visiting Moscow and St. Petersburg, in addition to also visiting Lviv and Kyiv in Ukraine. As for the 9 other exchange students from the United States that were also in Lviv in 1993 to 94, Andy Fauch says he still stays in touch with them. We have an app group that we talk to multiple times a day. All of their host families are doing okay. They're still in Lviv as well. We're thankful for that. One of those students from the U.S., Natasha Ryback, is from New Hampshire and is now a medical doctor and has established a joint cooperative between Brown University and a medical school in Ukraine. It provides for HIV and AIDS services, Andy Fauch said. We're using that as a backdrop to help send medical supplies for those who are staying on the front lines to fight. People can donate to that by visiting the link https://fundly.com/friends-of-ukraine-ri. Jury convicts Hernandez of murder by Kim Smith. An Ector County jury took just 1 hour Thursday to reject an Ector County man's claim that he shot his cousin to death in self-defense. Jacob Escobedo, 30, was killed in the early morning hours of August 11, 2018, outside his uncle's home on Cohen Street in Pleasant Farms, 12 miles south of Odessa. Misael Marquez Hernandez, 33, was arrested later the same day at his girlfriend's house in Odessa and charged with first-degree murder. During closing arguments Thursday morning, defense attorney Kevin Acker argued the evidence showed Escobedo was high on cocaine and alcohol. The two argued, and Hernandez was forced to shoot him in self-defense. According to Texas law, someone can successfully argue self-defense if they reasonably believe it's immediately necessary to protect oneself against unlawful deadly force or serious bodily injury. The law further states a jury must believe an ordinary and prudent person would act the same way in the same circumstances. During the trial, the jury heard testimony that the two men spent August 10, 2018, eating barbecue chicken and drinking beer with their uncles and an aunt, and Escobedo was found dead the following morning by one of the uncles. Hernandez, who lived and worked with the victim, was gone, and authorities immediately began looking for him. Investigators found a 9mm handgun in Hernandez's possession when they arrested him, and tests later proved it was the gun that was used to kill Escobedo. During a taped interview that jurors watched, Hernandez told Ector County Sheriff's Office investigator Javier Leyva, he and his cousin argued, and during the argument, Escobedo hit him once while they were sitting inside a pickup truck and later threw beer in his face. The defendant also said he shot Escobedo while Escobedo was standing outside the driver's side door of the truck, and he was sitting in the passenger seat. After firing the gun once, Hernandez told Leyva he got out of the truck and shot Escobedo three more times while the victim was on the ground moaning. During closing arguments, Acker told the jurors that during deliberations they got to be Sherlock Holmes by making deductions and drawing conclusions. He reminded the jurors a nearly full plastic bottle of tequila and measuring tape was found near Escobedo's body and suggested they might have been potential weapons. Pounding a package containing the tequila bottle repeatedly on the jury box, Acker asked the jurors if a reasonable person might think they would sustain a serious bodily injury if they had been hit by it. He suggested the tape measure could have acted as a pair of brass knuckles in the hands of a man like Escobedo, who once served 3 years in prison for robbery. He pointed out Escobedo's Texas Rangers hat wasn't pastel, it was red and black. He reminded jurors Escobedo had alcohol and a cocaine metabolite in his system at the time of his death. The defense attorney also recalled that a medical examiner testified Escobedo had a main coronary artery that was 75% blocked. The defense attorney suggested Leyva didn't sit close to Hernandez so as to develop a rapport with him during the interview, but rather to intimidate him. He also suggested Leyva purposely changed the subject every time Hernandez mentioned self-defense because Leyva was part of a team determined to charge him with first-degree murder. When Leyva asked Hernandez if Escobedo was alive when he left, Acker pointed out his response was, "Did he die?" He had no clue that he had even hit him, Acker said. During his rebuttal, First Assistant Ector County District Attorney Greg Barber stood up and pointed at Hernandez. "Yeah, Jacob Escobedo had a heart condition. He had a 9mm bullet in it that was fired by that defendant," Barber said. As for Escobedo's hat, Barber showed the jurors a photo of a deceased Escobedo still wearing it. "If there had really been a fight, would it still be on his head?" Barber asked. "It was Hernandez who brought a gun to a cookout down the street from his own home, a cookout where he wasn't surrounded by strangers but by family," Barber said. Barber also showed the jurors the portion of the videotaped interview of Hernandez acting out the shooting. Had he fired the gun while protecting himself, wouldn't Hernandez have thrown up one of his arms to ward Escobedo off? Barber asked. In the video, he just showed himself firing the gun, his gun arm over his chest, the other in a resting position. Hernandez himself also showed how he stood stationary while firing the final three bullets into Escobedo, who he said was moaning, Barber said. "Is that self-defense?" Barber asked. Escobedo wasn't a danger to Hernandez when he was standing outside the pickup, and he certainly wasn't a danger after the first shot left him wounded on the ground, Barber said. If the shooting had been in self-defense, Why didn't Hernandez seek help from his uncles or call 911? Barber asked. The prosecutor also noted Hernandez never complained of any injuries, and he urged the jury to study all of the photos of Hernandez to find injuries. The prosecutor also pointed out two other key points in the transcript of the Hernandez interview. Barber noted that Acker failed to point out the moment when Hernandez told Leyva he had told Escobedo, "You are expletive, starting to piss me off, get out of here." From that statement alone, it shows who was the angry one that night, Barber said. In addition, Barber said that when Leyva asked Hernandez where he got the gun, he said he had bought it and he fist-bumped the detective, seemingly unconcerned with the fact he'd killed his cousin hours before. It was only after being told that he was being arrested did Hernandez say he was forced to shoot Escobedo, Barber said. The prosecutor refuted the idea Hernandez wasn't allowed to give his full story. He had every opportunity to say what happened, and he did, Barber said. The punishment phase of the trial was expected to begin at 1:30 p.m. today. COVID by the numbers. MCH numbers. Medical Center Hospital has released its daily COVID inpatient numbers as of 8:30 a.m. Thursday. 12 COVID patients in-house. MedSurge, non-critical, 6 COVID patients. Critical care, 6 COVID patients. 2 unvaccinated, 3 vaccinated, 1 unknown. 3 COVID patients on ventilator. 2 unvaccinated, 0 vaccinated, 1 unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients, 51 years old to 91 years old. COVID patients from outside Ector County, 1 from Alpine, 1 from Big Spring, 1 from Hobbs, New Mexico, 1 from Midland. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR tests drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. Volunteers needed. Medical Center Hospital is in need of volunteers for its adult volunteer program. Assignments vary. To learn more, call 432-640-2249 or visit mchodessa.com/community/volunteer-services. Quick hits. Shoot for the Future Clay Shoot. Midland West Rotary Club has scheduled Shoot for the Future Clay Shoot on today at Wind Walker Farms in Stanton. Proceeds for the fundraiser will benefit scholarships for MC Applied Technology students. Students benefiting from the scholarship include those enrolled in hands-on programs ranging from air conditioning, refrigeration and heating technology, automotive technology, collision repair, diesel technology, energy technology, and welding. For information, contact Tom Jones, Midland West Rotary Club, Vice President at tomwjones13@gmail.com or phone 432-553-5456 or visit www.midland.edu/clayshoot. Fish Fry Yays. Knights of Columbus, number 3203, and Daughters of Mary has scheduled Fish Fry Yays fundraiser from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. each Friday during Lent, except for Good Friday, March 25th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church Cafeteria, 618 East 18th Street. Plates are $12 each. For more information, call 432-332-5334. Citizens Fire Academy. The Odessa Fire Rescue has scheduled a Citizens Fire Academy. Classes will take place from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. each Tuesday, March 22nd through May 31st. Participants will have the opportunity for hands-on experience and will get to go on ride-outs at the fire stations. Must be 18 years or older. Deadline to register is today. For more information, call Michelle Cervantes at 432-257-0521 or email mcervantes at odessa-tx.gov. Rio Speedwagon, Wagner Newell Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market Road, 1788 Midland, has scheduled a Rio Speedwagon at 8 p.m. today. Doors open at 7 p.m. Concerts. The Hacienda Center, 12160 Texas 191 Frontage Road, Midland, has scheduled the following events. Today, Marca M.P., El Yaqui, Esteban Gabriel, March 25th, Bronco, April 8th, Luis R. Conriquez, Los Hilgueros del Arroyo y Luis Sanchez, June 24th, Banda MS, Conjunto Primavera Los Tudela S, Los Vendavales. For times, tickets, or information, visit HaciendaMidland.com. Second Saturday Serve, First Odessa, 311 West 8th Street, will kick off Second Saturday Serve from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday. Volunteers will meet in the Commons area for a light breakfast, brief project overview, and orientation, followed by assembly of widows' gifts boxes. Teams will then divide up and deliver gift boxes to each First Odessa widows, as well as widows in senior adult and retirement homes in Odessa. Text SERVE to 4778. For more information, call 432-337-1524 or visit fbcodessa.com. Don't mess with Texas Trash Off. Keep Odessa Beautiful has scheduled Don't Mess with Texas Trash Off Spring Cleanup Project from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday at Household Hazardous Waste Facility, 814 West 42nd Street. The annual event is part of the Great American Cleanup, which is the nation's largest community improvement program. For those who would like to participate, register online. A free shirt will be provided to all those that register on or before Saturday. The event will include free cleanup materials, vendors, informational booths, free paper shredding, upcycle garden planting day, free mulch, free food, giveaways, and music. The Don't Mess with Texas Trash Off cleanup events are planned March 12th through May 27th. To register or for more information, call 432-335-4586. Email kob@odessa-tx.gov. CTWT Meeting. Comanche Trails Woodturners has scheduled a meeting from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday at George Hancock's shop, 1709 Clark Street, Midland. Rick Gillen will demonstrate making cantilevered candlesticks on the wood lathe. The event is open to the public. For more information, call 432-439-5343. Aviation Fun Day. CAF High Sky Wing and CAF Desert Squadron has scheduled Aviation Fun Day, Ghosts of West Texas, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday at High Sky Wing, 9680 Wright Drive, Midland. Visitors are welcome to the Midland Army Airfield Museum to experience the sights and sounds of the Ghosts of West Texas. Air rides will be available for purchase, weather permitting. Lunch will be available for purchase. Admission is free, however, donations are welcome. Aircraft are also welcome to fly in. Fuel discounts will be available. Jason Boland and the Stragglers. The Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue, will present Jason Boland and the Stragglers, The Light Saw Me Tour, 2022, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday. For tickets or more information, visit theactor.com. Newsboys Stand Together Tour, with special guests Danny Gokey, Mac Powell, and Adam Agee, are scheduled to perform at 7 p.m. Saturday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market, 1788 Midland. Doors open at 6 p.m. Comedy Night. Cactus House, 1114 29th Street, has scheduled Comedy Night featuring Jenny Moore, Chris Crawford, and Mike Shields at 7:30 p.m. Saturday. Admission is $10 at the door. BYOB with ID. Adults Only Late Skate. Music City Mall Skate Rink and Roll has scheduled Adults Only Late Skate from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. each Sunday at the mall, 4101 East 42nd Street. This Sunday's theme is Bring Back the 2000s. Best costume can win $250. Golden Ticket Music City Mall Shopping Spree. Bustin' for Badges Clay Shoot Fundraiser. The 9th annual Bustin' for Badges Clay Shoot Fundraiser has been scheduled April 21st to the 22nd at Windwalker Farms Sporting Clays, 2551 County Road, C2801, Stanton. Registration check-in is 7:30 a.m. for both days. The event will include lunch and prizes. Permian Grad Talks About His Time in Ukraine by Michael Bauer. For many, seeing Russia's invasion of Ukraine has been disheartening. For others, including Permian graduate Andy Fausch, the tragedy unfolding in Ukraine has been felt on a personal level. Fausch, who graduated from Permian in 1993, spent a year living in Lviv, Ukraine, as a foreign exchange student after he finished high school. Andy, who is the son of Odessa businessman Phil Fausch, now lives in New York City as a marketing executive for a startup tech company called Osum. But the former Odessan has been to Ukraine a couple of times in his life and has been horrified by what is happening in the Eastern European country. "It's unbelievably difficult to watch," Andy Fausch said. "Ukrainians are such a proud, nationalistic, humble people. I'm not at all surprised by the amount of resistance that they're putting up. I'm surprised that Russian President Vladimir Putin didn't think this would happen by sending in troops, that thinking Ukrainians wouldn't stand up for their lands and their homes and for their families and communities." On February 24th, people in the U.S. woke up to the news that Russia had invaded its neighboring country. The conflict is now entering its third week as Russian troops advance towards the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv. Russian forces have shelled civilian areas and cut off electricity, food, and water supplies, forcing many to evacuate the country. Ukraine was once a part of the Soviet Union before declaring its independence in 1991 during the collapse of the USSR. Ukraine's rough history also saw the country fall under Nazi Germany occupation during the Second World War before the Soviets reclaimed it. It was 2 years after Ukraine's independence when Andy Fausch, along with 9 other Americans, went to Lviv, a city located in western Ukraine that has a population of around 721,301 people near the Poland border. "I lived with a host family that had sent their granddaughter to the U.S. the same year that I was living with them in Ukraine," he said. "It was just fascinating." Ukraine in 1993 was vastly different than it is today, at least before the Russian invasion. The country had just broken off from the Soviet Union and was still in the transition period from communism to a democratic country. "It wasn't an easy transition," Andy Fausch said, as many things in Ukraine were being rationed, such as electricity and food. "It was the end of the Cold War," he added. Coming from the United States with no perspective of what it was like behind the Iron Curtain, it was very unique in a lot of different ways. There were things like water and electricity that were rationed on a daily basis. Electricity and water was on for 6 to 8 hours a day. I lived in an old Soviet bloc apartment complex on the outskirts of the city. Because of the switch to capitalism, there was a confusion in Ukraine surrounding currency and inflation. Phil Fausch visited his son in Ukraine in the spring of 1994 for about 2 weeks, and both visited Russia. The elder Fausch talked about his experience during that trip, where they both noticed that Russia was also going through an economic depression at the time, just like Ukraine was. I can remember going into Russia and staying in a hotel, and they were using torn-up newspapers for toilet paper, Phil Fausch said. They were in a huge depression. It was horrible. During that visit, he remembers also visiting Moscow and St. Petersburg, in addition to also visiting Lviv and Kyiv in Ukraine. As for the 9 other exchange students from the United States that were also in Lviv in 1993-94, Andy Fausch says he still stays in touch with them. We have an app group that we talk to multiple times a day. All of their host families are doing okay. They're still in Lviv as well. We're thankful for that. One of those students from the U.S., Natasha Ryback, is from New Hampshire and is now a medical doctor and has established a joint cooperative between Brown University and a medical school in Ukraine. It provides for HIV and AIDS services, Andy Fausch said. We're using that as a backdrop to help send medical supplies for those who are staying on the front lines to fight. People can donate to that by visiting the link https://fundly.com/friends-of-ukraine-ri. Nimitz student charged. A student at Nimitz Middle School on Wednesday afternoon told another that he was going to pull a gun out of his pocket, resulting in a Class A misdemeanor charge of threatening or the use or exhibition of a firearm in a public school. A news release from Hector County ISD said it was reported immediately and the campus police officer removed the student from class. The student did not have a gun, and it was determined that the student made the comment out of frustration. As we have stated in the past, we take statements of this nature very seriously. We ask parents to please make sure their children understand the seriousness of comments about threatening violence at school. March sales tax checks are up over last year. The city of Odessa received its March sales tax check in the amount of $4,145,624.08 this week. That includes the economic sales tax of 0.25 cents. The city will receive $3,316,499.26, and the Odessa Development Corporation will receive $829,124.82. The city saw an increase in sales tax revenue with March's sales tax revenue total, which reflects a $537,849.68 or 19.36% increase as compared to March 2021. The year-to-date total sales tax revenue for fiscal year 2021-22 is up 30.02%. or $5,330,761.69, as compared to the budgeted amount expected at this point of the fiscal year. The year-to-date total sales tax revenue is above the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $3,120,463.74, or 15.63%. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax revenue from 2 months prior to collection. March's collection is based on January sales. Medical Center Hospital will receive $4,537,253, an increase of about $1.8 million from this time last year. Warrant Resolution Week coming up. The Odessa Police Department has scheduled Warrant Resolution Week from March 21st through the 25th. The location to appear is Odessa Municipal Court, 201 North Grant Avenue, between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., Monday through Friday. The Municipal Court phone number is 432-335-3300. The mailing address for payments is Odessa Municipal Court, 201 North Grant Avenue, Odessa, Texas, 79761. Online payment link, https://www.municipalonlinepayments.com/OdessaTX. If someone voluntarily appears at the municipal court to address their cases with active warrants issued by the Odessa Municipal Court only, during this designated date range, amnesty will be granted and arrests will not be made. Additionally, the $50 warrant fee will be removed from each affected case prior to payment. Payments may be made in person, by mail, and online. Please contact the Odessa Municipal Court prior to making payment to ensure accurate amounts due and owed. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Friday. Judy Carol Louder, 74, passed away on March 1st in Dallas, Texas. Judy was born on July 19, 1947, to the late Teddy Dwight and Lily Lavada Barnhill. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, March 12th, at Evergreen Cemetery Chapel. Judy leaves to cherish her loving memory her sons Dwayne Louder, Daryl Louder and wife Leandra, brother Jimmy Don Barnhill and wife Mary, and two grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made in her name to your local Humane Society. Online condolences can be received at www.stantonfh.com. Wayne Westfall, age 76, went home to be with his Lord and Savior at his home on Sunday, March 6th, at 9:04 p.m., surrounded by his family and loved ones. Wayne was born on July 11, 1945, in Gorman, Texas, to Earlene and Wendell Westfall. Wayne was preceded in death by his parents and his grandson, Cody Campbell. He is survived by his wife, Olita Westfall of Odessa, his son, Heath Westfall, and his wife, Laura of Abilene, his son, Landon Westfall of Chicago, Illinois, daughter, Susan Welch, and her husband, Thomas of Odessa, son, Michael Campbell of Odessa, and son, Thad Campbell, and his wife, Tanya, of Temecula, California, sister, Patsy Murphy, and husband, Bill of Monahans, and sister Betty Gwynn and husband Danny of Iredell, Texas. He is also survived by his grandchildren and three great-grandchildren and many nieces and nephews. There will be a visitation at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home on Friday, March 11th, from 6 to 8 p.m. A celebration of life service will be held on Saturday, March 12th, at 1 p.m. at New Life Church at 7184 Club Drive in Odessa, with Tim Halstead officiating. A graveside service will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Maria Elena Cruz del Moral, 72, of Odessa, died Saturday, March 5th, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. March 14th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Pastor Francisco Bonilla is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Lisa K. Jilek, 62, of Odessa, died Monday, March 7th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Edith Jewel Gidcombe Phillips, 83, of Odessa, died Sunday, March 6th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 15th, at River of Hope Christian Fellowship in Odessa. Burial will follow at Rose Hill Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. Pastors Shay Lane and Sean Lane, officiating of Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Andrew Lyle Wills, 34, of Odessa, died Friday, March 4th, in Odessa. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Thursday, March 10th, at Antioch Christian Church. Arrangements have been entrusted to Frank W. Wilson, Funeral Directors of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.